From Glitch HQ on Riverside Avenue in Justified, successful Minneapolis, this is Nice Games Club, the show where nice game devs talk gaming and game development.
I'm Martha McGarry, and I make nice games.
I'm Stephen McGregor, and I make nice games.
And I'm Martha Croy, I too make nice games. For this week's episode, our topics are developing ideas and game dev success. And so, if everyone's ready, let's start. Guys, what episode is this?
98.
Yeah. Holy camoli.
Dang, that's a lot of episodes.
So many.
That's a whole lot.
So the next week is going to be a code comment, and that'll be our 99th episode.
Yes.
And the week after that, it's going to be what? A whole 100.
Yeah. Whoa. That's coming up real soon here.
Diggity dog.
Holy cow. Yeah.
We do have something special planned.
Yes.
Do we want to say what it is, or do we just want to let people deal with it?
It'll be a surprise. Yes.
Yeah, we'll break the format a bit and bring you something special for that episode, so look forward to that.
Yes. Also, we're recording a code comment today, but we realized we want more code comments of other people's games.
Yeah.
That'd be really cool. So mm-hmm. if you have any games that you really want to talk about and discuss, let us know. It doesn't have to be fancy code, because you'll see with Vengeance, it's not fancy code.
It can even be like a game jam project that you just want to, you know, talk more about because you did something interesting in it. Or even, you know, we'd like to get people in all stages of development, mm-hmm. stuff like that. So it doesn't have to be released yet even either. So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, none of the ones we've done.
Right.
Yeah.
None of them are released.
So that's what we've been doing for Code Comment. We do about one a month, every 4 weeks or so, and we have been for the last, I think, four, however many we've done so far, have been all projects that we've all been a part of as a way to sort of test the format, and we think it's gone really well. And yeah, stay tuned for Fingence next week. That's going to have a lot of fun,
yes,
right?
Yes.
With
my
Steven
brother
and
will be on there, the perpetual student.
For the first time on the program.
Yes. And we'll have more microphones than we know what to deal with.
True that.
But one of the cool things about Code Comment is when you're, and I know a lot of developers will say, oh, yeah, of course. When you're working on something and you come with this cool solution, mm-hmm. and then on screen it doesn't look that great because it just solves a problem that's like behind the scenes.
Yeah.
But you're really proud of yourself and you want to talk about it, or you want to know if this is the right way to do it, or is this how other people do it, or is this a novel solution, or am I reinventing the wheel? Like, what is, you know, I think talking about those things in the code comment format, it's been a lot of fun. Like seeing these things, like this is how it's built. And I think hopefully there's listeners out there who can get in touch with us, who are part of this community, who want to bring in their projects and like show how it's built. Mm-hmm. Let us know what you're proud of and what you're like not figured out yet, like that too, because it's in development. So we really want to get some more people with different projects in the clubhouse. So.
Yeah,
it's like picture on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. Like we say all nice things about all the stuff he makes.
So. Yeah, yeah, and that's the other thing too, is like the thing about Code Comment is like it's warts and all, and that's I think that's really important.
Yeah,
like it's important to see that stuff and to one, as a developer, be comfortable with that, and then two, as a viewer, to see those things and then contextualize that with your own projects. And so it's I think it's a nice service. So hopefully we can get some more people other than just our projects.
Because y'all already know we're not perfect.
I think the best way to get in touch with us is their email address, which we don't really talk about a lot on the show. We usually ask people to talk to us on Twitter. But if you want to get in touch with us with a little bit more long form, contact@nicegames.club. Let us know your ideas.
Yes.
That's also a place to give us topic ideas, right, Martha?
Yeah. So we have one of the topics today that we're going to be talking about is came from a listener. Mm-hmm. And that's really exciting. I think when we started this week, we thought we would solicit more topic ideas from you all, listeners. So if you have something that you want us to talk about, either if you see us around, talk to us like this person did, or send us an email and say, hey, I want to know more about this topic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We'll talk about it.
Yeah, it'll be really useful just because I find that like it's really helpful to just talk about what other people have brought up to me, because like that jogs my own ideas and my own thoughts and processes, and I feel more confident in myself after talking about it. So like maybe you can join us in the conversation by giving us a topic.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've done a couple of listener topics before, but a lot of times they've come to us, yeah, through in-person conversations or through like sort of sideways communication. but we'll see if we can make it more a more official. Like, you know, maybe we'll mention it more often on the show to get people more motivated to send us topic ideas. You know, half formed, fully formed. You can send us notes. You can send us just two words. Like, we would definitely want to get more of a back and forth process.
You'd have like a game jam for topics.
Not bad.
I guess that's just
Nice Games Club game jam.
A Nice Games Club
we
game jam.
We could get a bunch of listeners together and all nice do game a game jam. Yeah, nice. Oh my jam. God.
I like that didn't come to the, you didn't come to that conclusion until Mark said it. That's beautiful. Nice Games Club game jam. That's the only name we can have.
Sometimes you have 90% of the idea.
Yeah, you're right.
Oh my God.
Speaking of ideas.
Hey, speaking of listener-generated ideas, my topic today is developing ideas. So Chad came up to me at Convergence, recognized me for my voice, which was pretty cool. And he was like, what if you guys talk about, like, when you come up with an idea, but then you realize, like, I want to make an RPG, but there's, like, so many RPGs already out there. Like, I want to make a visual novel, but like there's so many visual novels, or I want to make a first person shooter and it's like there's so many. So how do you come up, how do you get past that blocker to actually start making an idea when every idea you come up with has already been done? And I thought that's a pretty good thing to talk about because it's a pretty common thing to feel.
It's true, there are so many different games out there already. Like we're like very young media, and yeah, there's just so many things out there already, and it's kind of daunting, right?
Yeah,
to just even think about it, going like, I'm gonna make this game when maybe I only have a few years of experience, or like a month, even a week of experience, I don't know, and I'm gonna make this game and it's gonna maybe be successful, but how do I make it successful enough, or even like how do I make it worth people's time when they've played all these other games?
Yeah. Right, and how do you, you're committing yourself to X number of months, years working on something. How do you know that idea is worth it?
Mm-hmm.
And not just to you personally, which is its own sort of set of considerations, but also like, is it worth existing in this world?
Yeah.
You know, like I'm going to have a great time making it and playing it, but like, does the world need it?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I think those justifying yourself in that way is kind of a tough call, I think.
Right.
I don't know. Got any suggestions?
Well, I guess the way I approach this when I'm making a game is I know that I am different. And so...
People have said that about you.
They have. Rudely and not rudely. but like because of my unique skill sets, my game is going to be different from another person's game, even if we try to make the exact same game. So like if I tried to clone Flappy Bird, my Flappy Bird is going to be different from the original Flappy Bird because I don't know, I coded it differently or the physics are slightly different or something. You know, there's a bunch of different things. Aesthetically, it can be different too. The point system can be completely different. Like there's a whole bunch of different ways you can take a game.
Mm-hmm.
And so I will like gravitate towards a game the way that I want to make the game, and then it will be unique in that way.
Mm-hmm.
So Steven's Flappy Bird would be different from Martha's Flappy Bird, which would be different from Mark's Flappy Bird.
Nice game jam. That's a really good point. Like where you start is not where you would finish. And when you have an idea, that is not the whole thing.
Yes.
Right? There's still a lot of, this is still a lot of shaping and forming that happens along the way. And it's not going to be, you're not going to take the same path.
Right.
I think that might be the most important part is like, even if you are trying to make exactly the same thing, which you're not, right?
Mm-hmm.
But even if you are, you're not going to.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you keep that in mind, then maybe that will help you worry about it less. That might not be enough to get you motivated to move forward, but you should know that that's true.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. That reminds me of a quote from one of my favorite motivational books, called If You Want to Write by Brenda Uland, who is actually a local she's dead now, but she was from here, Minnesota. And she said pretty much exactly the same thing you did, is that everybody is creative, original, and has something important to say. So if you are writing something that is true, or like she says in the introduction to her book, she's like, if you take writing out and put in whatever you want to do, this book will still work. So if you're making a game that's from you and what you want to make, and then it will be its own thing, mm-hmm. and will be coming from your original voice.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, yeah. It'll just happen on its own.
Yeah, you can't stop it.
Yep. No matter how much you try.
Yeah.
Can't get rid of you. Mm-hmm.
So how do you get excited about your own voice then in that moment? Like what, like it's, you know, it's going to be different.
Yeah.
Like you've heard us say it. You've read it elsewhere.
So
probably.
So now it's set in stone. Yeah, it's not fine.
But what's the next step after that? Like, how do you decide, like, this is, how do you really believe in the idea and move forward?
Sure. Believe.
Like, you want to make that RPG.
Yeah.
And you're inspired by a lot of specific things in RPGs. Then you want to make those same things. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you get over that? Like, even knowing it's going to be a little different, like, how do you get over it even past that?
Yeah.
That's a good question.
I've been feeling, like, super unmotivated about making my point and click because, mm-hmm. well, mostly because I can't. Like, I feel like I'm not going to live up to the thing that I'm trying to copy. Because I'm one person and they had a huge team or whatever, and I don't know how to do animations very well. And then I'm not very, like, confident that the story that I'm coming up with is any good. So, yeah, I've been having actually kind of a hard time working on my game lately because of this very thing where it's like, but, you know?
Well,
I don't know.
I think, I mean, the way I would answer this question that I myself just posed is, more pre-planning, right? So you say, this is the idea I want to have, and then start spinning it out on paper or in your note-taking app or, you know, however, like start coming up, like start thinking, okay, if I build it this way, well, then what about this? It's not going to work quite right. So how am I going to solve that little problem? Mm-hmm. Like do more of a design document, more than you think you would have to and more than is generally advised. Like you want to have a good impression as you get started. A lot of times you want to start making a prototype right away, like even with just a rough design. But if you want help really motivating yourself with the idea, like spend as much time as you need to, like fleshing it out and without worrying that that's going to be how it actually is in the end, or that you actually follow all those instructions you set yourself. Mm-hmm. But the more you spin it out. So Martha, in your example, you're saying, well, you don't feel you have a lot of confidence with animation. So there's a couple ways to go with that. You can say, okay, well, then I'm going to make a game that does not have a lot of animation.
Right.
Okay, well, if that's the case, then it's going to feel kind of weird in these places that you'd expect animation. So I need to make things, areas where you don't expect animation. And so then you can start slowly forming the shape of it, and then that can help motivate you to you know what you're doing. On the other hand, you could go the other way. You could say, okay, well, I'm going to design something where I can bring in somebody else to do some animation, and then I need to design my workflow that allows someone to slot in rather than have me working on it as I go, whatever. And so I think the more you identify those problems in workflow and design, and then come up with ways around them, or at least potential ways around them, right? Not necessarily that you're definitely going to do it, but just enough to get you going to convince yourself, yes, it's okay to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's pretty useful.
Yeah.
Because the worst thing you can do is be in the middle of working on it and not totally sure what the next step is, or not totally sure like if it's going to work exactly right. And like that uncertainty is important sometimes, but sometimes it can be a real motivation killer.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. That is well said. I like that. I don't know where I was going to go with that. But well said.
I've left him speechless.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess like when I have a game idea that I want to work on, I do similar to that, but I just kind of do it in my head.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the times I know I'm not going to be able to make this game, at least in the near future. So I'll just tool around with it in my head and go, oh, this would be cool to have. And then I could do this thing, and then this thing would work. And oh, it would be perfect. Then I'm like, oh, wait, I don't have any time to make this game. And then I get a little sad. But
that's your account started out really strong and then ended really like a total bummer.
Yeah.
I think people will relate to that.
Yeah, I think so too. But like I like that idea that like I can if I'm just on the bus and I don't have anything to do, I can sit there and think about it a while.
Yeah.
And that'll help me get motivated to like work on it.
Mm-hmm.
When I get the time to work on it. And so that, I guess that helps me a lot. It's just like having the idea fresh in your head.
Yeah.
Frequently will like make you thinking about it and make you want to work on it, because like it won't leave you alone. So I guess like just take a hammer and hit your head with it a bunch of times. You'll work on it. Maybe.
Sure.
That is an option. Maybe yeah. Not the best option, but.
Yeah, I think one thing that it can help motivate you to keep working on something is like finding the hook, or like the it's almost like what you would your elevator pitch to sell it, but yeah. Like finding those core things that you're like, I know I want this in my game and I'm really excited about like this particular part of it. Mm-hmm. And that can help you get over that like feeling bad about the rest of it, I guess. Is yeah, like, yeah. Well, as long as I have this core thing in it, then I'll be satisfied or whatever.
Yeah.
And that
yeah.
could be anything. It could be a mechanic. It could be a narrative hook. It could be, I don't know, like a visual aesthetic. Yeah.
Yeah. It could be a moment.
It can, like, yeah. It
could like just a feeling. A like, mm-hmm. It's like, I want to deliver this.
Yeah.
I think a lot about when I was doing short films back way long ago. Like a lot of times you'd talk to, you'd be on the internet like reading people's critiques of movies and stuff.
Yeah.
And you'd always see people saying like, oh, they just did this scene so they could do that like jump stunt or whatever. And then they wrote around it. How yeah. lazy. And yeah. like, no, that's how all ideas work.
Yeah.
Like you come up with the little thing you want and then you build around it to justify it. Mm-hmm. And I think of that a lot when doing game design stuff is you think like, oh, you know, you want to make a platformer, but like, oh, you want to make one that like each level ends in like a crazy boss or something. Mm-hmm. And then you want to design that boss stuff. Well, okay, so then I need to make everything else fit with that. And then, but then the game isn't sold as like a boss rush. It's so like, it's what the elevator pitch you make to yourself isn't always going to be the same that you make to other people when yeah. the thing is done, yeah. but it still is a similar process. And yeah, and use any excuse, I think, is the key. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what your excuse is. Like, you're like, I want to make an RPG, but like, I want to make one that like uses like regenerative mana instead of like the way that people use regenerative health. I think yeah. that's a neat idea.
Yeah.
Like, okay, well then that's the justification. Then everything else can just be whatever, as you know, it all fits into that. Even if that's not going to be the core element of the game. Like that's the thing that got you going, and just take it, just grab anything and run with it.
Yeah. I mean, like, yeah, literally all of your game ideas, there's going to be one thing that you really enjoy about it, or a few things that you really enjoy about
yeah.
it. And the one you decide to work on normally is the game that has the most impressive feel to you, I guess.
Yep. Right?
Like, it's the one that makes the most impression for you. So, yeah, just pick that one and then just run with it. Yeah. Whatever that is, and then just stick with that thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and of course, the problem can sometimes be, like, if it really get me to that idea of, like, everything under the sun, like, nothing's new under the sun, mm-hmm. like, you find that, oh, you started on a project, and you thought you had something interesting, and then you find out it's not that unique.
Yeah.
I think that can also really hurt your motivation, like, to continue working on a project.
Right.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
And, like, I think that's happened to all of us, right? Like, you think you have a great new idea, and it turns out it's not that great or that new.
Yeah.
You look it up on the internet and the URL is already taken. Yeah. Somebody already.
Exactly. Exactly. And my only advice, I've said this on the show like a bunch of times, is like novelty is overrated. I think that sure. like, and like you guys were saying, it is going to be different.
Yeah.
No matter how hard you try to make it the same. So like it's okay, I yeah. guess.
Well, it's like, then you think about like, what is your favorite game? Like when, don't you just want more of that game also? Like,
yeah.
I know like one of my favorite games is Stardew Valley. And like, if someone made a game that was almost, you know, had a different story, but was the same mechanics as Stardew Valley, like, mm-hmm. I would play that.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many that it's like, you know, I want another, you look for the same game again. Like, mm-hmm. you look for the same show again to have that same feeling.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
So being unoriginal actually can help sell your game because people are hungry for the things they've already eaten.
That's why basically. Sitcoms exist.
Yeah.
They're all yeah. like very similar to one another, but like they give you those good feels.
Yeah, so. For sure. Well, yeah, I mean, speaking of like television and yeah. like there's a great Star Trek example here because there's always a great Star Trek example. Everything. But like, you know, like there's Star Trek episodes that are about a certain topic, like they're a metaphor and allegory for something.
Yeah.
And then there's another Star Trek episode like, you know, 5 years later that's also about that same thing, mm-hmm. but they both have their value. You know,
right.
and like, and they're so incredibly similar. Like, if those can have their own value, then certainly, you know, a game you make that's similar to a game somebody else made is going to have its own value. And I'm thinking of like a great recent example is like Hollow Knight, which oh, is yeah. like everybody loves that game. Mm. It isn't that innovative.
Yeah, it's not. Right? It just does like the it does the one thing it really wanted to do very well.
Yeah. And in fact, it really plays on its familiarity. Mm-hmm. Like the people understand it, mechanics, like the Metroidvania style, you know, the like equipping the charms and all that stuff, and like right. getting new powers and boss battles and stuff. All that stuff plays on people's familiarity with it, mm-hmm. you know? And there's all, like 20XX is another game that just came out on Switch, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's been out for a while on other platforms, but that's just Mega Man X, mm-hmm. right? Like, it's got some unique things, you know, not to say any of these games are not, like, interesting or new.
Right, right.
But they are, like, examples where if you were making them and you didn't have a lot of support around you, you could easily think to yourself, like, this isn't who would care. And it's, yeah. you know.
And I'm positive that the developers of those games thought that. Like several
at some
times,
time, yeah.
yeah.
The they were like, "Oh man, I don't know if people really want to play as a bug, but like in Metroid 2." So yeah, like don't be afraid.
Yeah,
I mean, we say that working on our own games, but like, so it's difficult, but
yeah,
you can do it. I have faith in you.
As we've been putting together a Widget Satchel mm-hmm. and building out the levels, and we call it a Metroidvania Lite.
Yeah.
In a sense.
I mean, it effectively is.
Like, the more we build, the more, as it becomes a solid thing, the fewer of its, like, unique elements I'm able to see,
mm-hmm.
in a way. I'm like, this is just starting to become just a regular old video game. And there's something kind of a bummer about that, but
yeah.
That's just me fooling myself.
I feel that, too, though.
Yeah?
I feel that, too. Like, yeah, like, the main thing that originally we started with was that hook that, like, the more widgets you collect, the heavier you get, the slower you move and stuff.
Yeah.
And that's less... impactive in the game as it was in the jam.
It's now just a part of the experience
right.
instead of the whole thing. Yeah.
Right. And so like I've come to terms with that, and like that's cool though. It's mm-hmm. okay because like you still have that core mechanic in there.
Yeah.
And it still affects the game and it still like makes it interesting.
Right. It's not that it's been de-emphasized, it's that the game is just much richer now.
Yes.
And so we tend to like it used to be all novelty. And mm-hmm. now it's just a little novel.
Yeah.
And so it feels less special than it did.
Yeah.
In a weird way. I think that can happen as you work on anything, as it gets bigger or more. And that's not even as you work on it, but as you think about it, too. Then you start putting the pieces together.
Right.
It starts to be less interesting than your original idea, because your original idea was so pure.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And, like, your game will change over time as you're building it. Like,
yes.
So... that's another motivator. Is like, it's the same as something right now, but it could change, you know, like, I don't know what I'm trying to say.
Well, I mean,
but
if you're using like a sort of an agile style process, you allow yourself to modify your design as you go. Mm-hmm. And that's absolutely right. Like, it's not going to be like, you know, you keep at it. Like if it's a problem, like in the moment, you're like, oh, this is too similar to that. And I don't like that. You can change it.
Yeah.
Right? You know, you are creative and special and unique, and you can pivot if you want to. I mean, it has costs, of course, but you can do that.
Right.
Right, yeah. And then there's the problem of changing it too often. And
oh, yeah.
Then...
that is outside the scope of this topic.
Oh, yeah. For a later day.
That's a sort of Damocles that hangs over you all the time, but we're just going to pretend that's not a problem right now.
Right. You'll never change your game too much.
That's not a thing.
No. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think that like having I really like the idea that like when you come up with an idea, you get really excited about it. Then you just start working on it really fast.
Mm-hmm.
That's really cool too. Cause then you have a bunch of motivation and you get a bunch of stuff done. Then like a week comes in and you're tired and you don't want to work on it anymore. But like you did a whole lot of stuff with it. So like, that you still have that work done and you can come back to it later and think about it more and stuff too.
Mm-hmm.
So like maybe just when you're developing an idea, literally just take an idea and go, I don't know if this will work. Just do it and see if it works or
yeah.
not.
And that's like the opposite of what I was saying before about like all the planning and like document writing.
Yeah.
Sometimes just jump in with both feet
mm-hmm.
and then later you can do the planning once you hit the wall, you know?
Yeah.
We're going to get in trouble with our listeners again because people are complaining about how we always say, jump in, just do it. Who needs to plan? Planning's for...
Well, it's so interesting because on this show, I say it all the time, that mm-hmm. just get started, just do it, just do it.
Yeah.
But... in practice, and you guys know, like, I am an excessive, like, pre-planner and documenter, but that's not something I talk about because it's like, I feel like they're not contradictory
yeah.
attitudes
yeah.
necessarily.
I mean, I agree with you. I like planning stuff and making sure that things are, like, ready to go, but also, yeah. also like jumping into stuff when appropriate. It's like, they're like two parts of the same
thing. Yeah. Think of yourself like a scientist. You test a hypothesis. Mm-hmm. test it as soon as you can.
Yeah.
So that you can then get information from it and then continue refining your get a new hypothesis, yeah, and keep going until you get to the, yeah, scientific truth of your game.
Right, right. And the testing comes in different forms. Like, the testing could just be thinking about it a whole lot and, yes, making sure that it's like what you want and that it's the way to go about it. And the,
yeah,
other,
run it in your head. You don't, yeah, have to build it all the time, yeah, but that's still getting started.
It's still testing. And another form of testing it is just literally just starting coding and not knowing what you're doing, but like going at it anyways.
But not knowing what you're doing is really important.
Yes. But just, testing is, mm-hmm, what we want you people to do.
Yeah, and then if past that, you have your playtest scenarios, then you have demo builds, and, yeah, you have other, you're always doing that. And, mm-hmm, so that happens from the beginning as well. But like, you can, I still think it's important to say, just start doing it,
mm-hmm,
you know, and it's going to be different depending on what it is you're thinking of, you know,
right,
it,
right,
can be just start coding something, an idea, or it can be just start writing your design document, or just, mm-hmm, just sit in a coffee shop and think, like,
yeah,
but just start.
Yeah.
Right. Mulling about it is not going to move it forward.
Yeah. Yeah. Just sitting there going, oh, I just don't have the time. I'm not going to be able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to help you. It's bad.
That's 5 minutes that you could have been designing.
Yeah. Yeah. But rest is important too. Don't like do too much. That's bad.
I have not found that to be the case.
Well, I have. There have been moments when I've...
Oh, no, sorry. I've not found that to be possible.
Ah, well, okay. Well...
He's right, though.
Yeah.
I like naps. We've gotten off topic. Maybe. You know, I don't know.
We veer towards like the overarching topic of this program sometimes.
Yeah.
When we do topics like this, like how do I, the sort of softer topics, we tend to get back to this. It's about motivation and about believing in yourself, yeah, and all of that. And like, I mean, that's a habit we have as we veer away, because they all really link to this bigger idea.
It's true. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I think it's okay.
Yeah.
People need to hear it over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to go around and ask all of us how we came up with the ideas for our games, and mm-hmm, maybe that'll spark some inspiration.
How we justified moving forward with them?
Yes. Well. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess with Vengeance specifically, I think it was me and Charles really wanted to make a quick mobile game. I can't remember what it was. I think we were just like, we were playing some board game with a bunch of friends and stuff, and Lane was there. We were playing his board game that he was working on.
Mm-hmm.
We were playtesting it for him. I guess we just like randomly had this idea, like it'd be really funny if there was this fish that wanted to take revenge against other fish because this fish couldn't breathe underwater, and it would be called Vengeance because it's like vengeance, both with fins. And that was how we made the game.
So the pun is the core of it.
That was the initial core. Yeah.
Nice.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Humble beginnings.
Yep.
So you told the story on the show before. You built a mobile build, and yes, then you abandoned that relatively quickly.
Yeah, and within 3 months.
And you did some testing and like.
Well, we what we did is we built it a bunch.
Yeah.
And like we didn't show anybody or really talk about it much, but then we showed it off at one of our state fair. We showed it off at the state fair, and it, mm-hmm, just didn't really resonate with people. At least not in the way we wanted it to resonate with people. So you just scrapped it.
Yeah. And so what at that point? What is it that told you that was still worth pursuing?
We liked the idea of a shoot 'em up and, mm-hmm, stuff, but then we like started brainstorming ideas of how we could make or shoot 'em ups make sense and how we could make them more for ourselves, like, mm-hmm, more that made more sense for us.
Yeah, because my next question is about like there are a lot of shoot 'em ups out there.
Yeah.
So what was it like? And Vengeance has a lot of unique qualities in that genre.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you hooked into, the things that were different about it, or was it really just that you liked working together and wanted to keep going?
I mean, it was a combination of the two.
Yeah.
I think that like we did hook into the idea that like a cooperative shoot 'em up is unique.
Yeah.
And adding in like RPG and roguelike elements is different for this. And so we were like, yeah, we should do this stuff. But also like we had been working together and it was fun and we had a good time. So
right,
we wanted,
right,
to keep that up too.
So for Metro Nexus, again, it's a story I've told in the show before,
yes,
about how it started, and it's this homage to this old game, City Connection. What got me started is I wanted to make, I'd gotten a I went to a, I might not have told this part of the story. I went to a session at Adobe Max, which is this conference I go to every year that Adobe puts on. I went to this thing called Advanced Game Development Technologies. And this was back when Flash engines were still being developed. I'm trying to think, there's like three or four that were pretty big at the time. And this was a new one that was being done. It's called Citrus Engine, which is the one I'm still using. And just learning the basics of like building a state machine using an ActionScript backend. And I just, and I'm like, oh, that's great. I would love to do something with this. And I'm like, oh, there's that game I've always wanted to remake and could make. And so it was kind of just snowballed in a like kind of naturally.
Yeah.
And then once I had like a prototype of like roughly working how that game worked, because there's not a lot to that original game. I was like, okay, well, that's fine. And it started out as a more of a hobby thing. I didn't want to make it. But what got me going further with it was the art style element, which for people haven't heard it on the show before, each level in the game is like reskinned. So the character, the backgrounds, the platforms, all that is not just a different like style, like World 1, World 2, but a totally different aesthetic. And then the concept is that it's done by different artists as well. So like that kind of collaborative nature of it. And then I spun that out into a story that it was about and all this. So the basic mechanics of the game itself. Like, because it was an homage, that didn't motivate me as much.
Yeah.
It wasn't until I developed the multiplayer mode that I basically was like, well, there was no multiplayer mode in this original game, so I had to design that from scratch. And so that is where the game design elements started motivating me more, is building those elements, the scoring system, the firing mechanics, like the physics of the bullets and stuff like that, how they're not quite the same. They're almost grenades you lob instead of bullets you fire. And that's sort of interesting for a platformer type game. And so those things motivated me to keep to build it, but also feeling like it was still part of the original sort of core idea of it. So it really did start out as a clone, right? Like our question asker is proposing, like, but it was other things that got me going further. And it's those natural dimensions.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting because I'm trying to think of like, well, what if I didn't have some of those things? What would have kept me going? And because, you know, we don't want to say in this topic is that maybe you shouldn't keep going, but I'm trying to imagine a scenario in which you shouldn't. And I can't kind of think of one because there's always going to be something that you have a hook.
Right.
And if you don't have enough of it, then you can have other ideas.
Yeah.
It's like, like maybe when to abandon an idea is something we can talk about in another future topic.
Yeah.
But like there's always something. There's always something that can push you forward.
Yeah. What I like about your story is that like you had an idea to make a City Connection clone, but like you didn't know exactly how to start it. And then you were like, I went to Adobe Max and then they talked about this engine. And I really liked it. And I was like, oh, I should use this to make my clone. And that motivated you. Then like another idea you had motivated you. And then it just kept. It kept snowballing. Like
it's not always the same idea. It changes when you hit a certain wall. Then you need a different reason to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that changed a couple of times along the way, and that's probably healthy.
Yeah.
Yeah. The idea for my point and click. I don't want to say it came to me in a dream, but I woke up with like most of the idea that like most of the stuff that I have now already. Yeah. And I had, like, I called my mom and I was like, I had just woke up with this idea for this game. And I was like, poking Dylan, being like, Dylan, I just came up with an idea for a game. I think it's really good. And Dylan's like, stop, I'm sleeping. And I've like, I had just like ideas for, like, I can picture in my head what I want each room of the castle to be and what some of the puzzles I wanted to be, and those all like somehow came fully formed, but now I'm trying to connect them together, which is the problem.
right. You have the sort of foggy through the glass kind of view of the whole thing.
Yeah, exactly. And like, because they're all it's like pieces of it, and they're not all like, there's nothing putting all of them together yet. Yeah. And so that's the blocker that I've come up against now in this process is like, what's something like, I have very clear ideas of all these pieces, but I don't know how they look, how they all, the connecting, the little connecting pieces. It's like how I learned flute tunes actually, is that I get big chunks of the melody and then I have no idea how they all get, like I lose all the little connecting parts.
Oh, sure.
And that's where I have to like ask, like even if I listen to it again, I have to be like, teacher, what is this? What are these like little connecting notes? I don't know what those are. So,
You're gonna face something probably interesting when you start putting those together, is that there's gonna be some incompatibilities.
Yeah.
And decisions you make earlier in the process, like not even earlier in the sort of like big idea, small idea of the game, but just whatever you work on first, you're gonna start solidifying some core concepts, and then those fuzzy ideas, once you get to them, they're not gonna fit as well. And then you're gonna have to adapt them. And that's gonna be that is hard. Like to have like you have these two or three, like just as an example, like two or three kind of like ideas you want to do. You work on one of them first and the other two have to change, right?
Yeah.
The first one doesn't because you worked on it first. Yeah. Like that can be kind of tricky. And the fear of that, even if you don't understand exactly that's the process, the fear of making it complete or really solidifying it, that can hold you back too, right?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Because then it suddenly becomes a thing instead of, oh, I can change anything.
Yeah, yeah.
Like
yeah.
I can dream up anything.
That's when working on a team is useful, because in Widget Satchel, like we had a lot of like design discussions where like this or that.
Yeah.
And we would like argue the merits of this or that. Mm-hmm. We'd have to spin it out. If it's this, then this other thing is then that. Mm-hmm. And then we had to like, we threw away so many good ideas that would be probably harder to do if we were just working on it on our own, like any one of us. Yeah. We just sort of, you had to be accountable to each other and to the work we were asking each other to do. Mm-hmm. When you're working on your own, it's really hard to maintain that discipline to throw something out that you wanted to do just because you didn't get to that part first, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, we're really positive on the show, but it's like important to be realistic.
Yeah.
Right?
Definitely.
And so I think it's like, you know, the reason that these things feel hard is because they are hard. Mm-hmm. Right?
It's true. Making games is not easy. Not at all. I'm also taking the segue, maybe. Nope, never mind. That doesn't really work. Game dev success doesn't really transition well with that, does it?
Well, part of coming up with an idea is knowing how you want it to end up in the end.
Yes.
And what you feel will make your game a success.
Right. Yes. So that thing, but pretend I said it. Perfect transition, Stephen. Well done. Good job.
A+ work, guys. A+ work.
Crash and burn. So I was talking with people who worked on Clawbreaker, including Martha, and we had different ideas on like what the success for the game means, right?
Yeah.
Like I was like, I just want this game out.
That meeting was so funny because we're
out
like
the door.
Yeah,
because Ava would be like, so what do you think about this goal? And Stephen would be like, well, does that goal include the game being out? Then sure.
Yeah. That was basically me. Yeah. But like other people in the meeting were like, they were not just satisfied with just having a game release.
Yeah.
They wanted people to see it. They wanted people to play it. They maybe wanted to make a little bit of money off of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah, okay, that makes sense, but I just want the game out. So
right.
Whatever makes that happen more quickly. But like, I was just thinking about that a lot. I just wanted to talk about that. Like what defines success for you and your game?
Mm-hmm.
I know there are different types of success. There's financial success. You're able to keep making games, or you make a lot of money off it and you can buy a helicopter or something. That's our dream, right? But but like that's an example. Critical acclaim, maybe people like just keep telling you that your game is really great. They get a 9 out of 10 on Metacritic or something. Those are important. Personal goals, maybe like you really wanted to make a game that would just use the color blue and that's it. I don't know. That'd be interesting, right? Like that can be a personal success for you. Are there other examples of types of success that you could use for your games or your game dev life? Those are the ones I came up with offhand.
Like if your game is supposed to say a certain message or like get across a certain idea that people get the idea that you're trying to say,
right? Yeah, those are like the personal goals that I brought up. But I mean, sorry, like that's more specific about that. Like that's important. Like having like if you want to say something in your game, that could be like a large part of the success of the game is like people are getting that idea from it. There was I feel like there was a bunch in the indie dev the movie, indie game the movie. Jonathan Blow, he was talking about Braid and how like people were playing the game, but they weren't like understanding the message that he wanted from it. And that really disappointed him. And like that spoke to me in a way, because like, I was like, yeah, if you're trying to make this game and people just aren't getting it, in the way that you wanted them to get it, then like it's disappointing because like maybe they're approaching it a different way.
Yeah.
That you wanted. And like games are games. So like people are going to play the game however the heck they want to play it. And that's fine. And I'm not expecting people to do anything different with that. But like you still want them to maybe get something from it that they're not getting. Even if it's just like two people going, oh, this is what you meant.
Right. Your success, like maybe you do get a bestseller and then, but then you forget that that's not really what you wanted out of it.
Right.
You wanted to actually say a thing and you wanted people to hear it.
Yeah, exactly.
And maybe that didn't happen.
Yeah. And so in some ways it's disappointing. Mm-hmm. And like, if you define your success in a way that like, that's what you want is you want somebody to feel something from this and they're not feeling the thing, then it doesn't feel like a success in that way. And that's not great. So I guess like for me personally, I'm more in line with like personal types of success.
Mm-hmm.
So like I really just want to make sure that like I'm trying to say something with my game or like I learned something from the process or something. Like my main goals is I just want to be a better game developer, or I want to have more games out so I can say that I have more games out. I'm not really much concerned about like how much money that the games make or how many people give it 10 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's most important to me is that like the game is good to me.
Yeah,
I guess.
And those are modest goals.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's important and healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been thinking about that a lot lately because like right now I'm working a widget satchel and I'm not making a lot of money right now.
Right.
Because I'm working more on these personal projects.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking to myself like, well, why am I doing that? Like, is it, like I want to get them out.
Yeah.
I want a lot of time, especially with Metro Nexus, because it started as this little hobby thing, even as it's gotten bigger. And even if I've done promotion for it and I've taken it to events and I've gotten some attention for it, like all those, I still have just maintained, like, it's just going to get out there and then whatever.
Yeah.
Like, it lets you off the hook when you're like, I don't care if it sells a copy. Like, because then you can feel emotionally comfortable with not selling copies.
That's true.
Right. So, but now I'm like, well, what is the point even? Like because you want to work on the next game and the next game.
Right.
And then what about your fifth game? What do you probably want to sell some of that fifth game.
Mm-hmm.
So it's difficult. Like, where do you like, and each project is different. So you're working on we're all working on more than one project and they have different goals.
Yeah.
Right. So I don't know. I don't really have an answer exactly, but like, I've been thinking about that a lot more lately. Especially as I sink time and money into something that like I've told myself I don't expect a return on.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, why don't I? You know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that like for me, I do think that like I kind of say that like these games aren't going to make a lot of money as like a safeguard. So that, like when they don't make a lot of money, I don't feel bad because I'm like, I knew that already. But like,
yeah.
In the back of my head, like way back in my head, I'm like, oh man, Vengeance is going to make $1 billion. I'm going to be so rich. People are going to love me.
Uh-huh.
but like realistically, I know that's just, it's not going to happen. It's not going to make $1 billion.
Right.
It'll make some money.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think that like I am sort of protecting myself emotionally by telling myself that like, I just want to make sure that the game is good.
Yeah.
But also I think that like is the most, that is what's more important to me, frankly.
Yeah.
Like even if I make money, I will consider that to be more of a success than it not making money. But yeah, if the game is not good but makes a ton of money, I don't even know if I would be satisfied with that. That's a hard question to ask.
Well, there's something specific about Widget Satchel is that we're trying to develop it for consoles as well as PC.
Yes.
And that was a push that I was promoting on the team because I personally want to learn about the console submission certification release process.
Mm-hmm.
And we're making steps on there, and we can talk about that maybe more in a future episode.
Yeah.
As I've gone through a lot of this, I started to think like, well, if we're doing that, we might as well, you know, I mean, like it becomes a, like where do your ambitions end?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's definitely a case where I'm thinking, and it's definitely gone into, as we're continuing to design things, I keep thinking like, well, we're going to sell it for a certain amount of money. And so you have to get that, like, well, is it going to be enough content? And like, I've been pushing us to make the levels a little longer.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's time we don't necessarily have,
mm-hmm.
but like, I think it's important. But then I'm like, well, if the goal is just to get it out and learn something through about these processes, then is that important? And it's, I don't know. I guess when you put time into anything, you want to make it worth it on every dimension.
Yeah.
Right? And it's kind of difficult. Yeah. Because unlike design questions, where you want to like sort of set things in stone and make sure that you don't drift too much, these kinds of motivations, like setting those in stone isn't necessarily the same kind of like a positive thing.
Yeah, and right. Like you probably shouldn't set your goals in stone anyways, because you'll reach them eventually. You need
you want to keep going,
right? Yeah, yeah, yeah. So.
But we're not making Widget's Satchel cheap. We're making it like we're pricing it what it's worth, and we're trying to do a smart strategy there. I don't know, Stephen. For you, do you expect to make any money on Widget's Satchel?
No, I guess I didn't go into it expecting any money out of it.
Is that just your default position?
It is. Yeah. Well, no, it's not with Treasure Stack. Because I'm getting paid to work on that game, and that's like a
well. Then you don't care if it sells a copy. But you draw a salary.
I mean, okay, I do. But like that actually, yeah, this kind of challenges my ideas on it. Because with Treasure Stack specifically, I do want that to be successful, and I want it to make a lot of money. Because I want the people I work with to also benefit from this a lot. Not that I don't want you to benefit from it.
I'm sitting over here, You know what? There's a difference there because that you're in a professional environment. Yes. You go to an office. You work for a company,
right?
Like that you, and you're all working together on a product.
Yeah.
And even though it's a game that you believe in as much as you any other personal project, Treasure Tech particularly is like a great indie game that doesn't feel very like corporate motivated. Like it feels like a real nice little indie game that's made by this company that you're drawing a salary to work on.
Right.
And so it might just change your attitude a little bit about like it's the environment is different.
Yeah. Well, right? I mean, also
it's a professional environment.
Yeah. And this like specifically like the way how well this game does specifically reflects how good I'm doing in the company, I suppose. Yeah, so like professionally, it makes me look better if this game is more successful.
Mm-hmm.
So like that's part of the motivation for me wanting it to be more successful.
Right, right.
Whereas like I said, like with Vengeance, if that game is successful, I will look better too. But like that's not why I made the game, and that's not why I'm working on the game. So like that's not the motivation for me.
You hit on something really interesting there, which is your motivations are tied to what you get back from it.
Yeah.
Right. So that's why when you're an indie and you're like, well, I don't care if it makes a lot of money, it's because you're already like wasting your time and money on it. So you're so far in the hole that realistically hoping to make that money back or to make a profit is like kind of pie in the sky.
Yeah.
Which isn't to say that you shouldn't hope for that or shouldn't even plan or expect for that. Because I think we all on personal projects, we all budget too much time and we put in a little bit too much money. And that's just a pit we fall into all the time. But my point is that what you expect to get back from it is because you put into it like blood, sweat, and tears, and that personal feeling. And so you think more about getting back the personal validation less than, what you're saying is you're putting in professional motivations and you expect it to do well because that will provide you with professional satisfaction.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. That is accurate. Goodness, like I'm really glad I brought this topic up because it's kind of hard to talk about because it's just like so there's a lot of different things happening
when
you're like working on your game and you want it to be successful.
Mm-hmm. And what motivates you really, what you think of as your success metric changes what you do to reach it.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the reasons why we all say, oh, we're not going to make any money because like we're not marketers, we're game designers. Mm-hmm. And like some of us can be good at it, you know, in certain elements, but that's not why we started doing it. So it lets us off the hook and it means that we don't have to work as hard on that part.
Right.
Because, you know, like we talked about it on like for the show, for example, like we have to promote this show to get listeners, but at the same time, like we have other projects we're working on.
Yeah.
So we keep those motivations in check so that we don't worry about spending too much time on that.
Right.
We could spend more time on it and we could get some results from it because we're pretty good at it. We've done pretty well with the efforts we've spent, but we've calibrated that.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be the case for these other things. It's like, to think about all those dimensions and then actually like, and make a self-assessment and really decide and then like audit yourself. Like, what am I going to do to reach that level of success? Even if it's a modest level in that dimension.
Mm-hmm.
I say that and I think it's really hard to do.
Oh yeah. No, it's really difficult. My dad is always saying, you gotta make sure your priorities are in order.
Uh-huh.
And I am terrible at this because like, I just do too many things and go, oh, I could just do them all. But like, yeah, like if there's, you always have to like reprioritize and make sure what makes sense for you at this moment makes sense for you right now.
Because
Maybe you have more time and you can spend it, or maybe you have a lot of energy and you can spend it. Or maybe you have a lot of energy but not a lot of time, and so you can just throw yourself at stuff Or maybe you have a lot of time and not a lot of energy, so you just want to, you need to relax or something.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, just, yeah. That's part of it, too. I guess that's part of, like, the how successful you feel. Because, like, sometimes I want to make sure I'm successful, so I will, like, make sure I keep working on all of these different things and making sure I'm getting what I want from them back.
Mm-hmm.
But by doing that, I'm also not, like, there are, like, parts, I'm not, what am I trying to say? I'm not meeting the needs that I need for myself outside of just making games too.
Sure.
So like I need to make sure that I'm also successful in like mind, body, and spirit, I guess. Like I gotta make sure that like I eat healthy and or work out or walk sometimes or you know, talk to people or just general things to make sure that like you're still also healthy.
Right, like what are you going to do to achieve that success, and at what cost?
Right,
right.
Yeah, that's another thing. Yeah, mm-hmm. Like, yeah, yeah. How much do you want the success?
Yeah, I think the hard thing is knowing how much effort will take to reach it. Right, which is why sometimes you spend too much on some element and not enough on others.
Right,
or like more you put in more effort than you need to reach the goals you want because you don't know how much it takes.
Yeah,
right.
True.
Or on the other hand, you don't put in enough because you don't think it will take that much.
Right,
right.
Yeah, Jesus, this got big.
I feel like I have a very skewed sense of what success means. Like me and my brother talk about this a lot because we're like, how are we going to succeed in life if we don't have a board game in Barnes & Noble? Because mm-hmm. that's what my dad has.
Oh.
And so it's very like, it's like, how do we live up to that?
Sure. you had an example growing up.
Yeah, yeah. Where it's like, here's this game that started in someone's basement and now literally, you know, like D&D is now ubiquitous. It's mm-hmm. like almost like scotch tape.
Yeah.
And my dad's game is not his anymore. It's owned by Wizards of the Coast and is in Barnes & Noble. And it's like... I know that these dudes are all just nerds, you know? Like, it wasn't... You know, they're not... People get all like...
They're not better than you.
Exactly!
yeah.
So, like, you know, so then it's like, well, anything could become that big. So why isn't, you know, why won't my stuff become that big too, you know? Mm-hmm, I don't know. It's weird.
Well, like, is there a conflict between, like, you wanted, like, maybe aspire to like have your game at Barnes & Nobles, but also you're like, anybody could do it, so like, why does it matter whether or not my game is at Barnes & Nobles? Is that...
Kinda.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have something similar where I've worked in advertising and I've done video work in the commercial space, and some of my work has been seen by millions of people.
Mm-hmm.
And after doing that for a while, I really stopped caring. I just didn't care anymore.
Yeah.
And it made it really easy for me to walk away from like, oh, but you can do this really cool thing for this big brand. And I'm like, I don't care. And it's funny because I used to care. And it wasn't wrong for me to care.
Right.
Right? It's not wrong for you to care about that. It's just now I don't.
Yeah.
And it's not that I learned something. It's just I just changed what my what my definition of that level of success is.
And it's just not as important to you anymore.
Yeah.
Right.
Do you want a game, you know, in stores? And, you know, maybe you do, but maybe because you saw that it can happen almost randomly to a lot of different people who are of varying levels of success. Does that metric matter to you? Like, I don't know.
Like the game in stores is as a metaphor to mm-hmm. be like, it's nationally known.
Sure. Oh yeah. That makes sense. Yeah.
Cause like nobody's games in stores anymore.
That's a fair point. Yeah.
But like, yeah, I mean, it's really exciting that our game is going to be on Steam. Like, that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
Even though it's becoming less of a big deal. But like,
I mean, it's not a big deal. Not everybody can say that their game is on Steam.
Yeah.
I like saying that to people. Not everybody can say that you did this thing. Mm-hmm. It's like, not everybody can say that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's important. Like, the things that you did are different from other people. And like, that's something you can tell them. And they'd be like, wow, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those things really get you going, especially like if you are making games and you haven't released one yet.
Yeah.
Like I know I've saved a lot of screenshots of like emails that say your title has been approved for release on X or whatever.
Yeah.
I have a couple of those now.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and then you just sort of like, okay, it's a milestone. It's a moment. And then you think about it objectively and you're like, it's not that big of a deal. but then you think about it in the terms of your experience. Right. And then you're like, okay, this does have value, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You have to define that value. Mm-hmm. And that definition will change over time. But like,
well, it's one of the things you hear a lot of people say, don't compare yourself to others.
Yeah.
Right. And this is a case of that where you, mm-hmm. you want to like compare it to your own story, your own journey, you know, that right. sort of cliche.
Yeah.
That's definitely true here. The question is like, it is always going to change because if as you move through life, as you achieve milestones, you are going to have to recalibrate your expectations
yes.
all of the time. Yes. And when you work on a project, you're like, I don't care if it makes any money. And then you get closer to release and you start seeing like, oh, we have some really good key art. It's like, maybe we should try to make some money.
Mm-hmm.
Like that is not you sort of like veering away. It's not like a design. It's not like it's not scope creep exactly.
Yeah.
It's because your motivations have changed and maybe they should,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's hard to know exactly what the right direction is or what the right, where to settle on that at any one moment.
Right.
So listeners, if you have any advice for us, because we're all struggling with it.
Yeah, we don't know. We don't know what we're doing in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Help us, please.
Yeah. Send us a tweet at Nice Games Club. Send us an email. contact@nicegames.club.
Yes. 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 Oh, I did want to bring up one thing before we go.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to know like how to work on a team when you have competing ideas for success.
Oh, so,
like, yeah. For
example, this goes back to your example at the top.
So
yeah.
like with Clawbreaker, I'm like, just release the game. I don't care how well it does. but everyone else is like, well, we should probably make some money off of this or, you know, get some people to see the game at least. I'm like, whatever.
Yeah.
So like, how do you deal with that, I guess? In my case, I'm just like, it makes... I probably shouldn't be forcing everybody else to just shove the game out just because I
was
going to
say, is this
out.
Really just a how do people work with you when you have such modest expectations?
Yeah, maybe a little bit. Well, specifically in the Clawbreaker case, I'm comfortable working on the game more as long as like we specifically say like we're going to release it on this day. And that
August 16th.
Yes.
Soon.
Yes, very soon. And so like that really helps because it makes it feel like it's a solid thing that will happen.
Yeah.
And that makes me feel better, more comfortable. Whereas like us putting more efforts into making the games makes the rest of the team feel more comfortable because like we're spending time trying to get people to get the game and see the game and mm-hmm. play the game. And so that is that helps them feel more successful in their games too, in the game too.
Yeah.
So I think like trying to find not compromises so much, but synergies with your team is good, is helpful.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. And having that release date is important for a team project because then it becomes a come what may situation.
Yes.
It's like maybe someone has more goals than others, mm-hmm. different types of goals. But if you've come to agree on that, and hopefully when you agree on things like when do we stop work or how far do we work on this particular thing,
yeah.
like it takes into account everybody's motivations
right, yeah,
and goals.
Yeah.
And maybe it is a compromise. But once that's set, and that's a case where like it's probably more important to be more nail down more things when you're on a team,
mm-hmm.
right? And I think it becomes, especially if it's a team that does not, there's no one who is serving to pay the others. It's a volunteer group that are all working on a project together.
Yeah.
It becomes kind of what's called a duocracy, where if you want the project to be more successful in this dimension, you have to do it.
Yeah.
You can't always get all your team to come on board. You can't tell your team. You can't convince, if you could convince them, then that's one thing.
Yeah.
But if you can't, then you can't expect them to contribute to that.
Right.
And then, you know, duocracies can be messy, but sometimes they're good ways to run a project. At least there's always a little bit of that dimension that's helpful. Certainly with all the console stuff, that's definitely my motivation.
Yeah.
And so I've never expected anyone else on our team for Widget Satchel to care about that or to put any effort towards it.
Mm.
And I've tried not to make that put undue pressures on the game otherwise. I think it has probably, but I've tried to make it so that like if you guys like so it didn't make it harder on you guys because you don't care as much about that element as I do.
You're conscious of it and that's important too.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. You definitely don't want to like pressure your team into doing things they don't want to do because you really want this thing to happen.
Yeah.
So
that also leads to then them doing like, oh well if this is the motivation of the project and that's not my motivation, then why am I working on this project
right,
at
yeah,
all?
Exactly.
I think that can definitely happen where you have somebody who's really excited about a project, gets everyone together, they all seem to agree on it, and then there isn't a total clear understanding of what the intent is, and then you have someone who ends up just being the they drag everyone along, and then there's rivalries and disagreements and unsaid arguments, right. Stuff like that.
Yeah,
that's really easy to happen. I think probably happens a lot, certainly for indie teams who are not paying each other.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Communication is key. Right.
There you go. That's the message we're gonna leave you off on.
Yeah, that's why we have Clubhouse meetings.
It's true. We also communicate one another and argue and discuss and argue more. Discuss some more too.
Yeah, I mean, speaking for myself, I think we, the three of us, do pretty good about what our definition of success for the podcast is.
Yeah,
and when we hit those marks, and when we feel like that we don't, and I think it's because we talk about it, right?
Yeah, we do. We bring it up frequently. We literally did today. Yeah. And not just in this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
I it's important. Just make sure everybody's on track and everybody's together. I mean, I think that's a lot of the issue we had with Clawbreaker initially is like, I think we had ideas for success, but we didn't necessarily like explain them a lot. And I'm glad that like we came together and talked about it, because I was just like, let's just get it out. And other people were like, I don't want to just get it out. And I didn't really understand that until we discussed it.
Mm-hmm. Martha, I haven't heard enough about your definition of success for Clawbreaker.
Yes.
I have aspirations, but I know that I don't have enough. I won't do the work to make them happen.
Yeah.
So, I've, you know, dialed back my expectations for it.
Yeah.
But I've also like at one, I dip back and forth either way, because at first, like when we were first, right before that meeting, where we talked about our like definition of success.
Yeah.
Like I was feeling very much in Steven's camp, especially we were going to donate all the money to someplace. Cause I was like, we're going to make like $100 and that split seven ways is like no money. And we might as well just donate it to a someplace. Cause then at least it's going to something good instead of like buying us coffee.
Yeah.
Because that's all it's going to be. Mm-hmm. And like very down about it. But at the meeting, like I felt more motivated, like, oh, like if we're selling it for this much, like this price point, then like selling the amount of copies that we think we'll even get our own community to buy would actually be, not an insignificant amount of money for each of us.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then that made me feel more motivated to be like, oh, we could like, I could do some more, you know, like just stuff that more motivation to do more work on it.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure the trailer, you know, like all that stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd like to have it, people play it.
Yeah.
Have it be sold to people.
Well, I know that, I mean, because you love demoing it.
Yeah.
Because you're good at that. And like, it's a fun time had by all. Like, I kind of understand that you want that to happen in living rooms all over the country, right?
Exactly.
Like that kind of experience. If only you could be there to do your crab dance for everybody.
Exactly. Like, yeah. To have a hologram of me, like, VR being like...
We'll just port Clawbreaker to VR.
Oh my God. And it'll be just a TV. And then me next to it going...
Blocking the TV.
Yeah.
Perfect.
What you should actually do is, in an update, you should do a like tutorial mode that is just Martha's Guide to Clawbreaker, where it's just you like walking through, explaining how the game works.
Green screen.
Yeah, basically. Just a little video tutorial.
That'd be fun.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
I say that this podcast was a success.
Ah! Oh, well, that's sweet of you to say, Martha.
That's our show. If you haven't already, subscribe to Nice Games Club in your favorite podcast app. Be sure to give it a good review if you liked it or a nice like us. We need to know you're out there, so leave a review and tell all your friends, too. We want to hear directly from you as well, so follow us on Twitter and all the other things at Nice Games Club. You can email us at contact@nicegames.club as well. Send us your topic ideas. We really want to hear about that.
Yeah.
Lastly, you can find out more about the show and your nice host, as well as get all the links and show notes from this and other episodes at nicegames.club. So, until we start again, remember to
play nice
and make nice.
That feels like a really good transition.
Ah, oh, well.
It's not too late.
I don't know. I don't know how to do the transitions. I'm not experienced. Okay. Game dev success. You want to save us? No, I didn't do it right. Okay, give me a second. I got this. Uh-huh. So, yes. I don't even remember what I was talking about now.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.